The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening. My name is Andrea, for those of you who I've not met before. And for the last few weeks that I've been here, I've been talking a little bit about some of the states of mind that challenge us in our meditation practice and actually in our daily lives as well, the states of mind that tend to get in the way of our well-being. There are five classical states of mind that are referred to as what are called the five hindrances that tend to make it hard for us to meditate, to calm down, and actually get in the way of our well-being as well, our sense of happiness and tranquility in our day. And these five states are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, and doubt. And the last time I was here, I talked about sense desire and how sense desire keeps us kind of on a chain or a path of just continually wanting to have more and more sense pleasure. And in that discussion, I came to talk just a little bit about sense pleasure. And that's what I'd like to talk about a little bit tonight, is sense pleasure and transforming how we understand sense pleasure. And then I'll tie that back into this teaching on sense desire and how that kind of gets in the way for us. So I'd like to start by just saying, you know, that some of these teachings that are offered by the Buddha, some of these teachings are subtle and they're hard to understand. They can go against the grain of what we normally believe, what we normally think of in terms of how to be happy. So these teachings can be a little challenging for us. So sometimes these teachings actually ask us to look at our assumptions, look at our beliefs, and to question them, to explore them, to not necessarily just brush them aside right out front and say, well, you know, these beliefs are useless, but to explore them and to see, well, how are these helpful and how are these not so helpful? And these teachings actually do, over time, come to transform how we understand our world. And an understanding of sense pleasure is one of these places where our perception, our understanding of how sense pleasure functions for us gets shifted and changed as we actually begin to observe it and look at it and understand it. So the way we normally relate to sense pleasure is that it's a good thing. I mean, it's when we experience sense pleasure, it makes us happy. And we generally, in our world, are getting the message that more sense pleasure is better. You just take a look at the ads on television, and they are really guiding you to buy, to consume, in order to have, so that you'll have this thing that will make you happy. Here's this one ad that shows a guy I don't have the actual ad copy here in front of me, but it shows a guy sitting in front of a Ford Ranger truck and a whole bunch of other, like, camping gear and all this mounds of stuff that goes with this truck. And the main line of the ad says something like, to be one with everything, you have to have one of everything. And that's kind of the approach that we go with in our culture, you know, that consuming is what will make us happy. And we really have bought into that in a lot of ways. You know, that we think that, you know, we know actually that having a new truck isn't going to ultimately do it for us. But there's a way that we do think that if I can only get that truck and then get the next thing, get that new cell phone, and then, oh, and then get that new job, and then get that whatever the next thing is. If only I can just keep getting things that I want, then that's happiness. That's kind of how we've defined happiness, in a way. If I have a nice house and a comfortable place to live, and friends that I can go have fun with, and you know, just like the way that we orient our lives is through finding happiness by stimulating our senses in a pleasant way. And that's very much how our culture is guiding us. It seems invested actually in us consuming in order to be happy in that way. So the Buddha actually has a different perspective on sense pleasure. And he asks us to explore it. So I'm sure many of you have heard or gotten the sense that that the Buddhist teachings say sense pleasure is bad. And that's not quite what they say. They say something more along the lines of attachment to sense pleasure, needing sense pleasure, will cause us suffering, will cause us to be unhappy. So it's not a matter of bad and good, actually. It's more a matter of what the Buddha was talking about was ways to look at our lives that will ultimately lead us to greater happiness. And so that's interesting that we typically think about having sense pleasure, having things that make us feel good, as being the source of happiness. And yet the Buddha says attachment to that will actually not make us happy. So that's a challenge. That maybe is a little bit of a challenge for us. So the teaching that the Buddha recommends here, it's got three parts to it. He suggests exploring the gratification with respect to sense pleasure. So how does sense pleasure gratify us? How does it make us feel good? The second aspect is to explore what is called the danger of sense pleasure. And the third aspect is to explore the escape from sense pleasure. And there's a teaching, I'll read you a little bit of this, to give you kind of the framework of this. Before I was enlightened, it occurred to me, what is the gratification in the world? What is the danger in the world? And what is the escape from the world? So this is the Buddha talking, the Buddha reflecting. Then it occurred to me, whatever pleasure and joy there is in the world, this is the gratification in the world. So he's acknowledging that. There's pleasure and joy in the world, resulting from sense pleasure. There's pleasure and joy in the world. that the world is impermanent, bound up with change, bound up with suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in the world. So he points to the fact that things are impermanent, subject to change. That if we try to hold on to sense pleasure as being a place to make us happy, we are bound to suffer because that sense pleasure is going to change. Those things that we hold on to are impermanent. They'll disappear. They're subject to change. So we will experience sadness, loss, disappointment, grief, unhappiness as a result of trying to hold on to those things. And then he says, the abandoning of the desire for the world, this is the escape from the world. So the abandoning of the wanting, essentially, the sense desire, which is what I spent quite a bit of time talking about last week. Letting go of the desire for sense pleasure is what he calls the escape from this sense pleasure. So I want to talk about each of these a little bit, just to go a little in more depth about each of these three to explore what they mean and how we can work with them. This is actually a teaching to look in our experience at these things. It's not something that we're just asked to believe or to, you know, adopt as a view. He's suggesting that we actually look at our experience from these perspectives. Look at our relationship to sense pleasure and notice where we find it gratifying. How is it actually gratifying to us? This is the first exploration. So when we look at sense pleasure and having beautiful things, there is a joy, a pleasure, a happiness that comes from that. So one of the things I like about this teaching is that basically he's starting with a kind of a common sense understanding that sense pleasure provides some kind of happiness. So he's not asking us to say, well, sense pleasure bad, put it aside. He says, acknowledge the happiness that comes from sense pleasure. And then he further says, notice what that gratification is. What is the happiness around sense pleasure? And the teaching, the phrase in the suttas where he talks about this, he says, see how far that gratification extends. So how much does this sense pleasure happiness do for us? What is it? How far does that gratification extend? So this exploration around the gratification of sense pleasure is not asking us to say ignore sense pleasure or to try to push it aside or to suppress it in any way. It's definitely asking us to move in, explore what is the pleasure that comes from. What is the gratification? What is the happiness? What is the joy that comes from having things that we like? So observing it, get to know it. What is it that causes this happiness? How long does it last? How satisfying is it, really? You know, if we get something that we like, I mean, you know, let's take something small to start with. Like, you know, you have a desire for some chocolate. You know, you put that chocolate in your mouth and it tastes really good for, you know, about 3 seconds. And then it's over. So, you know, that particular happiness hasn't lasted very long. And so then typically what happens is that we go looking for something else to give us that next hit of happiness. So maybe a movie or maybe a fantasy, something to give us that little hit of happiness. And we do this over and over and over and over again. Now, with something a little larger, for instance, buying a new car, you know, the happiness that you get out of that new car, you know, it may last a little, it'll probably last a little longer than 3 seconds of happiness from chocolate. But still, even if you observe, you know, how long does that real sense of happiness come? How long does it last before it's just the car that you have that you drive around? It's just, you know, kind of taken for granted in a way. So just noticing that. The happiness that comes, how long does it last? Another exploration around this has to do with really getting familiar with what the happiness is about when we get something that we want. So when we have a feeling of wanting something, so wanting the new iPhone, you know, if we want something, there's that wanting feeling. And often that, I think I talked about this last time, that feeling of wanting is obscured by the fantasy of having that thing in the future. So there's the wanting, but we're not really paying attention to the wanting. What we're paying attention to is the fantasy that we have about how great things are going to be when we get that thing. And then we get the thing, and it feels pretty good to have that thing. But part of the exploration around looking at the gratification, what actually gratifies, what actually feels good around having what we want, is that we start to see that part of the reason it feels good to get what we want is because the wanting goes away. There is a sense of some happiness of having something pleasant in our lives. That kind of happiness is actually pretty transient, the happiness of having something that we want. It lasts a short time and then fades. What seems more compelling to us, but is not really noticed very well by our minds, is that when we get that thing that we want, there's a greater sense of happiness and release around the fact that the wanting has gone away. The wanting feels pretty uncomfortable. There's an inherent sense of dissatisfaction around the wanting. You know, if we want something, it means that we don't have it, and that, you know, there's a disconnect between the world as it is and the way we'd like things to be. So there's a mismatch. There's a sense of dissatisfaction in the wanting. When that wanting goes away, either from having the thing. If we get the thing, then that wanting goes away. Then that feeling of dissatisfaction goes away. There's a moment of feeling like everything's okay. Things are the way I want them to be. I've managed to control the world such that things are the way I want them to be, even for just a moment. And that feels really good, that when that wanting goes away. And that's actually the larger part of the gratification around sense pleasure. Is the wanting going away? And so this is an exploration for us to watch how much of, you know, if you can actually notice the feeling of wanting instead of moving into the fantasy about something, if you in the process of moving towards acquiring something, actually notice the wanting that comes along with it, you'll notice that the wanting doesn't feel very good. It actually is pretty unpleasant. And then when you see the wanting go away, if you go ahead and get the thing that you were going after to acquire, you'll feel that unpleasantness of the wanting goes away. And that feels pretty good to have the wanting go away. And the trick is, or the interesting thing is that the Buddha actually pointed to as a very counterintuitive thing is that we don't have to have the thing in order to have the happiness of the wanting disappearing. All that we actually have to do is to ride out that wanting. Because wanting is impermanent, just like anything else. It's an impermanent state. And so if we simply hang out with the wanting until it disappears, the vanishing of that wanting, even if we don't get the thing that we want, the vanishing of that wanting is like being released. It's a release, it's a relief. And in that, we begin to understand that there's a different way towards happiness. Not by having what we want, but by letting go of wanting. So the Buddha compared sense pleasure to a dream. He had a couple of different similes. I'll just give you a couple of them. He said that imagine a dream in which everything is wonderful and beautiful. You know, that you're in a perfect, place with lovely scenery and everything is just as you'd like it. Your dream has conjured up your perfect world. And when you wake up, the dream is gone. And he says, sense pleasures are like that. They've got that impermanent quality, that they're just like a bubble. They just vanish. So that, I think that analogy is pointing to really the impermanent nature, the ephemeral quality, the fleeting quality of sense pleasure and the happiness that comes from sense pleasure. So he compares it to a dream. Another thing he compares it to is to borrowed goods. That there's a kind of a happiness to having borrowed somebody's things and that you get to use them for a time. But that person is going to want them back. And so they're not really yours. And that's another way. I like this one to think about sense pleasure, because if you can understand the sense pleasure that comes, because sense pleasure will come. The body, the mind, the body is designed to produce pleasant sensations and unpleasant sensations. So pleasant sensations are going to happen. You're going to see pleasant sights, hear pleasant sounds. That's going to happen. If we can understand that as something that's borrowed, not something to hold on to, then we can appreciate that sense pleasure without demanding that it stay, without feeling a sense of loss when it goes. So sense pleasures like borrowed goods. They're not really ours. They're not ours to hold. They're not ours to own. So we have a misunderstanding about sense pleasure, kind of a fundamental misperception that having sense pleasure, a lot of it, strung along through moments in our lives, that is what will make us happy. And the misunderstanding is really connected to the fact that the wanting is what kind of fuels this cycle of getting the next sense pleasure. And that the wanting is actually burning us. Even as we have some happiness, as the wanting goes away and we get the thing that we want. The wanting, when we get the thing that we want and the wanting goes away, it feels good that wanting goes away. And what do? Actually, we construct another wanting in order to have the feeling of it going away. We don't think of it that way. We think about wanting to have something. But actually, a lot of it is kind of this, it's like an addictive process, that with the wanting and then getting the thing and then the release of the wanting, that conditions further wanting. And the wanting just becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And then we get tied on this kind of hamster cage wheel of having to keep running to get the next thing and just get the next thing. And we're never very satisfied. Even as we get something, it's like, well, what's the next thing? And what's the next thing? And just feeling like, oh, I just need more and more and more. It's kind of an addictive process. So we have this misunderstanding that having things is going to make us happy. You don't need to believe this. Really, what the suggestion is that you observe the happiness that comes from sense pleasure. Get familiar with it. And see, actually, how much of that happiness, how far does that happiness extend? And how much of that happiness has to do with this releasing of the wanting? So this moves us into this next aspect, the danger with respect to sense pleasure. And this a lot has to do with the process of wanting. It has to do with several pieces, actually. It has to do with this process of wanting and being tied to this cycle of having to get the next sense pleasure and not being able to just rest in life as it is, because we're always dissatisfied with it, because there's something that we've created, something that we want. We've created a wanting. So the wanting just keeps us on that unstable place of toppling forward, trying to get the next thing. So that's one of the aspects of the danger, that when we attach to sense pleasures, it puts us on this cycle of wanting over and over and over again, which basically makes us feel dissatisfied a lot of the time. Makes us feel like things are off, just not right a lot of the time. Another part of the danger or downfall with respect to sense pleasure has to do with what I mentioned earlier, that they're impermanent. That if we get the thing that we want, there can be a sense of, there's the attachment to it, there's the happiness that comes from having it, and then there's a kind of a fear that can come around, well, what if it goes away? So there's the sense of understanding that things are impermanent. So we keep trying to shore it up or protect it or defend it somehow. And we just tolerate this kind of fear as a natural part of our lives because we think that having things that we want is what brings us happiness, because we've had this fundamental misunderstanding about what makes us happy. So this belief that having what we want will do it for us keeps us tied to this wheel of wanting. And it kind of obscures for us. It makes it really hard to see where a deeper happiness might be found. And this is where this desire, this wanting around sense pleasure, is the sense desire that is the hindrance. The hindrance of sense desire. This is where it becomes a hindrance, because it covers an understanding of what actually can make us more truly happy, the letting go of the wanting. It obscures and gets in the way of being able to settle into the present moment, just meeting things as they are, without wanting it to be different. So this wheel of wanting kind of gets in the way of our being able to see a deeper kind of happiness. So the Buddha points to many downfalls, actually. There's a sutta in which he kind of lays out a whole bunch of ways that going after sense pleasure creates suffering for us. He says, first of all, you know, in terms of going after sense pleasure, we usually have to have a job so that we can, acquire things. Acquiring things usually costs money. So we have a job. So the Buddha didn't use this analogy, but, you know, we sit in front of the computer or wherever we are in our work, and we often have, you know, pain in our bodies contorted over our computer, or stress and strain in our eyes, or, you know, whatever we are doing in our physical environment to do our job, often there's a kind of a physical discomfort that happens around it, a kind of a stress to the body around just having to do that work in order to acquire the things that we want. That's a pretty minor one. And then he goes on to say, well, and then if we don't get the things that we want, then we feel like we failed. We feel like we're a failure. And that's a downside to this being tied to sense pleasure. If we get the things that we want, then we're afraid of losing them. And then he goes on, he says, because of people wanting to have things, you know, if you can't have a job, you might end up, you know, stealing or, you know, breaking into somebody's home to have things. This desire for having things, I mean, I'm thinking of oil right now, you know. Our country is insatiable in its desire for oil. We have to go into other countries and create governments and figure out ways that we can keep the oil flowing so that we can have the cars and have everything that we want. It's not just an individual thing that this being tied to sense pleasure creates. It actually is a large reason why there are wars, why there's oppression. So it's not just an individual personal suffering that's traced to this cycle of wanting. A lot of the problems in our society, in the world, are traced to this as well. So this is the danger of sense pleasure, that this insatiable wanting creates so much suffering, not only in ourselves, but just looking around us. If you read the newspaper, you can see, you know, if you read it with an understanding of how sense pleasure operates, you can see how much of what the news is about people trying to get what they want and creating harm and suffering as they go about doing that. So as a support for us, as we begin to understand the danger of sense pleasure, it can be helpful to understand that in terms of happiness, in terms of the ways that we can be happy, the happiness that sense pleasure affords is the lowest, most minimal kind of happiness that's available to us. There are other kinds of happiness that can come from letting go. And I'll read a little bit to you of what the Buddha said about this. He said, having understood as they really are, the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandoned craving for sensual pleasures. I removed the fever of sensual pleasures. Now first notice he doesn't say he abandoned sensual pleasures. You can't abandon sensual pleasures. Sensual pleasures will come. He abandoned the craving for sensual pleasures, and that's that wanting. That's that being tied to the wheel of wanting. I abandoned the craving for sensual pleasure, and I dwell without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other people who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with the fever of sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because there is a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy that which is inferior. So he's pointing to, he mentions the bliss or the happiness of what he calls divine bliss, which is basically meditative bliss, the bliss that comes just when we can settle into meditation and find a peace from just being here with what is, just meeting our experience. There's a peace and a bliss that can come from that. And as the mind settles down and settles into a state of concentration, it can get really, really happy. And it doesn't have to have anything. It just connects with experience. And that happiness of meditative bliss is more delightful than the pleasure that comes from having something that we want. It's much more delightful. And so that's one piece the Buddha's pointing to. And then he actually says there's another happiness which surpasses even that meditative happiness. And that is the happiness of insight, the happiness of letting go, the happiness of non-attachment, the happiness of non-clinging, of not wanting, of not having wanting being the endless fuel of our existence toppling us forward over and over again to just have the next thing and want and have and want. Letting go of that, he says, letting go of that wanting surpasses even meditative bliss. So based on this misunderstanding around sense pleasures, we miss out on deeper kinds of happiness, actually. More fulfilling kinds of happiness. Happiness that is less dependent on conditions of the world and able to be found in meeting the conditions of the world as they are, without resistance, without wanting them to be different. Just imagine if, and just even in just a kind of a thought experiment, if your mind could be perfectly at ease with things as they are, would there be any problem? I mean, it's a kind of a subtle happiness that he's pointing to. It's a happiness of peace. It's not an excited kind of happiness. It's kind of a very quiet, it's okay, nothing is wrong. We typically, you know, need to be finding ways to, if we stumble into that place of nothing's wrong, often it's kind of like, well, what can I find to do with this? You know, it's like, I've got to have something next. We rarely take time to actually hang out with that place of, oh, nothing's wrong right now. What is that like? So getting familiar with that as it comes up. So again, we misunderstand about sense pleasure. We think, you know, that having what we want is as good as it gets. And that being tied to that wanting obscures these more settled or less dependent kinds of happinesses, the happinesses of meeting our experience in the moment, the happiness of coming into meditation. And again, this isn't something that you need to believe. If you're interested in exploring these other kinds of happinesses, you need to sit down and experiment with the practice, with the meditation, and find out for yourself how the happiness of meditation and insight compares to the happiness of having things. So really, you know, the Buddha, it doesn't tell us so much to not do things. He suggests looking at our experience. Understand our experience. Really understand how far that gratification of sense pleasure extends, which will then make us see a little more clearly the danger of the sense pleasure tying us to this wheel of wanting and all of the kinds of suffering that comes with it, the suffering of feeling like we're a failure if we don't get what we want, the feeling of fear if we have what we want to try to protect it. And as we understand the danger of sense pleasure, we start to recognize that it is this attachment. It's the craving, it's the holding on to, needing to have things be a certain way that creates that suffering. It's not the sense pleasure itself that creates the suffering. Sense pleasure is just sense pleasure. It comes, it lasts for a few minutes, a few seconds, it goes. Another experience comes, it goes. Most of our experience is like this, just fleeting. We're in the stream of fleeting experience coming and going, some of it pleasant, some of it unpleasant. It's not the pleasantness and unpleasant that's the problem in our minds. The problem is that we suffer when we want it all to be pleasant. And we feel like we're a failure if it's not all pleasant. So we start to move towards understanding the escape from this wheel, which has to do, I mean, the escape can be maneuvered through moving through these levels of pleasure, the deeper levels of pleasure, starting at sense pleasure, but then exploring the deeper level of pleasure that comes in meditation. It's easier to let go of wanting to have things when you can just sit down and feel very peaceful for 40 minutes or 45 minutes in the morning. It's much easier to let go of the need to have things be as they are when you can touch into that peace on a regular basis. So that makes it a little bit easier for us to let go of that holding on to having things be the way we want them to be. So the Buddha offers us a path for exploring sense pleasure. Not that we have to just cut it out. He's encouraging us to start where we are, you know. If we find that we are enjoying sense pleasure, observe that enjoyment. Recognize it. Notice how far it extends. See if there's any suffering around that sense pleasure. Is there a little fear of loss? Or is there a sense of, you know, tightness and tension in terms of trying to hold on to it and keep things in order? So exploring, starting with, what is our common sense understanding of sense pleasure can begin to help us transform our understanding of sense pleasure and perhaps begin to see this misperception around what we think brings us happiness. Hopefully in order to see a little more clearly what can bring us a little more stable kind of happiness, a lasting more lasting kind of happiness, the happiness of letting go instead of having. So those are some of my thoughts on this aspect of gratification, danger, and escape. Does anybody have any thoughts or comments or questions or... Yeah, use the mic.
Okay. Do the sense pleasures and like how they affect us, do they have the same effect on like less materialistic things and like, I guess, bigger wants that we have?
So a lot, I mean, so are you thinking about like wanting a new job or... wanting a relationship or something along those lines?
Yeah, something, yeah, not...
Not so much having a thing, but more a wanting a situation,
yeah.
A life situation. Wanting those life situations is often, if you look at it, is about wanting pleasant experience. You know, having a relationship, we envision happiness with that partner. We envision, you know, blissful vacations in Hawaii or, you know, so there's kind of a lot of what we want in the world kind of comes back to wanting this happiness, this kind of happiness of just having control and having just pleasurable experience. That's even the kind of life situations, they are kind of about. I mean, most of us wouldn't envision, you know, being in prison or something. You know, it's like we envision pleasant life scenarios as what we want. So it is related. And again, you know, we're not asked to not go there. You know, it's more along the lines of noticing whether there's attachment to or a kind of demand that something happen. It's like, if I can't find a relationship, it means that I'm unlovable. I'm a failure, I'm no good. And it doesn't mean that. It just means there's no relationship at this moment. But there's so much in terms of the need, the want, the kind of demand that we put on the life situations that we want. You know, if there's a need for a certain life situation, that's the grasping, that's the attachment. We can kind of move in the direction of an aspiration. You know, the whole practice actually unfolds through an aspiration towards freedom, being free from suffering, free, you know, moving towards happiness essentially. And so there's a kind of a skillful movement towards happiness. But if we're clinging to it or trying to demand it or demand that it happen in a certain way, or that we have a certain situation, a certain life situation, we will suffer around that. Whether we get it or not, we will suffer. If we don't get it, we'll suffer by telling ourselves we're a failure, that we are no good, all of that side of things. If we do get it, there's, because we've invested so much in it, there's almost always some kind of a having to engage to keep it in place, because things just continually are changing. And so the, you know, getting something, when we get something that we want, that actual getting that thing that we want lasts for only a split second until things start to change. And then we actually have to keep moving and grasping and to keep it going. So the encouragement is to kind of move in a direction that feels like it will bring happiness, but not need anything in particular to happen. That's kind of a paradox in a way. to explore how to move in that direction. So opening your heart to what is, but inclining in a particular direction. You know, you might discover, and this has certainly happened for me, that my life is completely different than I thought it would be. And yet I'm pretty happy right now. So, you know, if we have an idea about where we want to go, a life situation or direction, we may be closing off all kinds of other options. If we just are clinging to, I've got to have that thing, we may be closing off all kinds of other options for us. We can head in that direction, but be open to other possibilities at the same time. It's actually very freeing. It's very freeing when we think of it that way. I mean, so we don't have to like just sit there on like lumps on a log. I mean, I think that's sometimes this teaching gets interpreted that way, you know, that we're not supposed to want anything. So that means we just sit here and, you know, take what comes or something. It's more about just not having to have, not needing to have things be any particular way. But you can still move in a direction, trying to make the world more peaceful, more kind, more happy. I don't know if that... Yeah.
The wanting is, it's an image, it's like an image, right? It's like, it's image, it's like an image, and it's a status, because...
So are you saying that the wanting, I think what I hear you saying is that you have an image in your mind of something that you're wanting. Is that what you mean? That
no, well, society as a whole has conformed, you know, you're into a certain status. So if you, the wanting, if you're in this status or this because you want to be like known as this is good, this is bad, and if you can't get it, then you're like we were talking about suffering. You suffer because you can't get it. So wanting is like temptation also.
It, definitely, wanting is like temptation.
Temptation, yeah.
Yeah, and the image,
even
did you
though
mean
you
like
don't
a status? Or
right, even though you, probably even though in your heart, in your mind, you don't need it because it's not going to do anything for you, but the image that it would bring to you.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yes, that's a big part of it, I think, in our culture, that... You know, it's like, well, I have this cell phone and this car, this Prius, you know, this is the image I want to create and how have people see me. You know, that's actually a part of the sense pleasure in a way, you know, that wanting to be seen in a certain way. Yeah, that's a powerful part of it.
Right. And then you say where people, to the point where they commit crimes, to the point where... They, you know, they just go out and get it because this is what they want. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. They just commit crimes and they go out and get it, even though it's not gonna make them feel better. If anything, it's gonna make them feel worse. But they somehow or another, they don't really know that.
Exactly. That's that misunderstanding. Yeah. That's that misperception. They think just in some realm they think it is gonna make them happy, but ultimately, it doesn't really satisfy.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
So, how they come about thinking that way.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I think partly it's because we're very short-sighted in a way. You know, it's like we look for the closest hit of happiness that we can get. And, you know, we'll go for that next bit of having something, even at the expense of the suffering that it's going to create. It's kind of like scratching an itch, you know? It's like you scratch an itch and there's this kind of a pleasure in that, and then you stop and it's like, the itch gets way worse. You know, so, you know, but you can't stop yourself from itching it. So it's kind of that kind of pleasure, in a way, that happens. It's like that So we think it's as good as it gets to have that thing, and we're really short-sighted and don't see that if we let go of the wanting, there would actually be a deeper kind of happiness, a more satisfying kind of happiness. That takes a little longer to get to. So it's kind of like we have to go down. There's a thing called, in mathematics, called a hill climbing algorithm. If you've got a small hill and then a large hill on a graph, you know, if you get to the top of the small hill, you think you've made it. And, you know, maybe there's clouds obscuring the bigger hill, so you don't see it. And then, you know, but to actually get to that bigger hill, you actually have to go down. So you have to let go of some of the happiness that you're familiar with before you can get to the higher kind of happiness. And so it's threatening. You know, we don't feel comfortable letting go of that kind of happiness because we don't really feel like it's guaranteed that other kind of happiness. So we just as soon hang on to the little bit that we have. It's very sad, in a way, how we're put together. But there is hope in that we can actually, we can change that pattern. It's possible. It's possible to change that pattern. It takes some faith, it takes some confidence to be able to take those steps, but it's possible. So we need to stop, so... I can stay for another couple minutes if there's some more questions. So thank you for your attention.